It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teachings, giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. At the very end of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, Suzuki Roshi said, "I feel Americans, especially young Americans, have a great opportunity to find out the true way of life for human beings. You are quite free from material things, and you begin Zen practice with a very pure mind, a beginner's mind. You can understand Buddhist teachings exactly as he meant it. But we must not be attached to America or Buddhism or even to our practice. We must have beginner's mind free from possessing anything, a mind that knows everything is in flowing change. Nothing exists but momentarily in its present form and color. One thing flows into another and cannot be grasped. Before rain stops, we hear a bird. Even under the heavy snow, we see snowdrops and some new growth. In the east, I saw rhubarb already. In Japan, in the spring, we eat cucumbers." So, in a few simple words, Roshi has managed to convey the guts of Buddhism, the guts of our Zen practice, which is not about some weird way of thinking or esoteric practice, but rather about finding the true way of life, the true mind of life for human beings. It's funny, people hear the word Zen and say, "Oh, I'm not into that," implying that they're just a regular person and not into anything so far out. But Zen is for everybody. Zen is for every single creature. It's the most basic thing in the world. And oddly, today, because we forget these basic things, we need to return to what they are. Fortunately, through his kindness and compassion, a wonderful teacher has appeared to us. For example, Roshi says, "The Zen school is based on our actual nature, on our true mind as expressed and realized in practice. Zen does not depend on a particular teaching, nor does it substitute teaching for practice. We practice Zazen to express our true nature, not to be enlightened. Bodhidharma's Buddhism is to be practice, to be enlightenment." And Roshi also says, "If you reflect on yourself, that self is not your true self anymore. You cannot project yourself as some objective thing to think about. The mind, which is always on your side, is not just your mind. It is universal mind, always the same, not different from another's mind. It is Zen mind. It is big, big mind. This mind is whatever you see. Your true mind is always with you, whatever you see." And so all of this is actually very basic, but obviously not obvious. Today's talk is going to be a bit preparatory. First, I'd like to remind you about the correct way to listen to a talk, or more to the point, the correct view of yourself as a listener. And after that, I'd like to give you a little history of Suzuki Roshi's life at the time when he gave the Zen Mind Beginner's Mind talks. So first, as a correct way to listen, I share the following teaching of Dogen. And Dogen says, do not regard the capacity to expound the Dharma as superior and the capacity to listen to the Dharma as inferior. If those who speak are venerable, those who listen are venerable as well. The ritual enactment of a Dharma talk is performed by the listeners as well as by the speaker. Know that it is equally difficult to listen to and accept this sutra. Expounding and listening are not a matter of superior and inferior. As the fruit of Buddhahood is already present, they do not listen to Dharma to achieve Buddhahood. As indicated, they are already Buddhas. So as with Zazen itself, for Dogen, the ritual of listening to a teaching is not undertaken as a means to the goal of awakening or understanding even, but simply as an enactment of the Buddhahood that's already present. And he, you know, in Dogen being Dogen, he pushes this one step further, which is so amazing. So in some of his Dharma Hall discourses, that's what he called, like his, he had a monastery, a Heiji, and then his monks, and then he would give a talk to his monks, and those were called Dharma Hall discourses. And he posed a further analogy to his approach to Zazen as an enactment ritual. So that's what Dogen feels Zazen is. We enact the ritual of being practice and being enlightened. And he uses his own expounding of the Dharma as an enactment ritual rather than a mere technique to communicate philosophical doctrines or practice instructions. For example, in Dharma Hall Discourse number 70, given in 1241, if you can imagine, 1241, Dogen says, as this mountain monk, Dogen, today gives a Dharma Hall discourse, all Buddhas in the three times also today give a Dharma Hall discourse. The ancestral teacher in all generations also today give a Dharma Hall discourse. Already together, having given a Dharma Hall discourse, what Dharma has been expounded? No other Dharma is expressed, but this very Dharma is expressed. What is the Dharma? It is upheld within the monks' hall. It is upheld with the Buddha's hall, with the Buddha hall. So Dogen never states the content. So in this particular discourse, he does not say anything. he doesn't say anything. He just says he's giving a discourse. So that's all he says, except to say that he's giving it together with all the Buddhas and ancestors, and that it is upheld in the ritual activities of the monks in the monks' hall. That's all. That's all he. So this is a ritual discourse that celebrates the ritual itself and its enactment beyond any other content signified by the ritual. As such, it provides a mirror to the ritual enactment of Zazen that Dogen proclaims is itself the essential realization or enlightenment. So therefore, Suzuki Roshi says that talking about it and listening to it being talked about will be one of our practices, but we will just be talking about something and just be listening to someone talk, without trying to figure out some intellectual understanding. So sometimes we listen, sometimes we talk, and that's all. But we don't listen too closely. There's no need to remember what I say. Suzuki Roshi says that. Don't listen too closely to me, and you don't have to remember anything. So do you understand? This is really powerful. This is such a powerful teaching, that what we're doing right here, right now, is simply enacting a ritual of giving a Dharma discourse. So I'm giving a Dharma discourse, and you are listening to a Dharma discourse, and that is a ritual of enactment of our own practice and enlightenment, period. There's nothing further to be gained or understood. So by giving that, what I've just read you, as this short little paragraph, that was his whole discourse, he like pushed this point of, all we're doing here is a ritual. That's all we're doing. Don't make anything more of it. Then Suzuki Roshi goes on to say about two dangers that we come across in the listening process. And he said the first is hearing a statement as a kind of echo of yourself. So you're actually listening to your own opinion. And if it doesn't agree, you reject what you hear, or you may not even actually really hear it. And the second is to be caught by the statement. If you don't understand it, you might be caught by something involved in your subjective opinion, or by some particular way that something is expressed. For example, during a discussion, someone asked Suzuki Roshi, if he ate meat. And Roshi said, yes, I do. Well, the Buddha didn't eat any meat. Yes, Buddha was a very pious man, Roshi answers. So you see, this person only heard his own opinion about meat eating is a bad thing. He expressed no curiosity about Roshi's opinion, even though he asked the question. So he asked the question, do you eat meat? And when Roshi said, yes, I do, instead of like saying, oh, that's interesting. Why? I thought, you know, Buddhists don't eat meat. And then Roshi can say why. Instead, he went, well, Buddha didn't eat meat, which is a judgmental statement. And Roshi said, yes, Buddha is a very pious man. He just skirted that altogether. So this person who asked the question learned nothing. Roshi comments on this little incident by saying four different things, all of which are very interesting. The first thing he said is, when my talk is over, your listening is over. There's no need to remember what I say. There's no need to understand what I say. You understand? You have full understanding within yourself. There is no problem. So basically, you already understand everything important inside yourself. So don't worry about it. The second thing Suzuki Roshi said is to have some deep feeling about Buddhism is not the point. We just do what we should do, like eating supper and going to bed. This is Buddhism. It's very simple. It's everyday life. The third point, Zen is not something fancy, some special art of living. Our teaching is just to live, always in reality, in its exact sense. And then finally, he said, to make our effort moment after moment is our way. In an exact sense, the only thing we actually can study in our life is that on which we are working in each moment. We cannot even study Buddha's words. To study Buddha's words in their exact sense means to study them through some activity which you face moment by moment. So we should be concentrated with our full mind and body on what we do, and we should be faithful subjectively and objectively, to ourselves, and especially to our feelings. So it's interesting that a student who had just concluded a 30-day Zazen retreat asked Roshi how to maintain the extraordinary state of mind he had attained. And Roshi said, "Concentrate on your breathing and it'll go away." Because Zen is not some kind of excitement, but concentration on our usual everyday routine. Some people start to practice just out of curiosity, and they only make themselves busier. If your practice makes you worse, it's ridiculous. And Roshi also says, don't take such a quote, interest in Zen. If you're too interested in Zen, you'll be focused outside your life. Some people will hear about Zen and get very excited and give up their lives to practice. Roshi says that kind of interest is not true interest. If you just continue in your normal, ordinary way, your character will be built up because it is going back to just you, and that's your strongest suit. So that's all I want to say about listening. Now I want to talk a little bit about Roshi's life, which can be divided into three segments. His time in Japan as a Zen student, husband, and father, and head of the Zen temple that he inherited. Secondly, his early days in America. And finally, after he left Sokoji, the Japanese Buddhist temple he came to be the minister of, and he established the San Francisco Zen Center in Tassajara. That's the third part of his life story. Today, I'd like to tell you about the second one, his early days in America, because that's when he gave the Zen Mind Beginner's Mind talks that this series will be about. This whole series will be about right practice, which is one of his three main subjects that he's talked about in Zen Mind Beginner's Mind. And it was the first that he spoke of in his Palo Alto Dharma talks. So I want to tell you a little about that time period and who he was and what the context was. It's very sweet, actually. So Suzuki Roshi arrived in San Francisco in 1959 to be a priest for the Japanese Soto Zen community. And while living alone in their large temple on Buchanan Street, he started sitting Zazen upstairs in the morning and evening. This is actually where I started my practice. So I remember this Buddhist temple, and you know, you walked in, it was a huge building, and you had to go up quite a number of stairs to the upstairs of the building where he had created this kind of extemporaneous Zendo. So gradually people curious about something, quote, Zen, the words spread through the local art scene. Lots of artists actually were the first students who came. So these artists joined him and the sittings became more frequent and more formal. And a few satellite groups also sprang up in Mill Valley, Berkeley, and Los Altos. And Roshi would join them once or twice a week for Zazen and to give talks. And eventually the woman who hosted the one in Los Altos, with Roshi's permission, began recording the lectures. And after a long dragged out period of transcribing and editing, Zen Mind Beginner's Mind was published. And people love it, but honestly, I'm not sure how many people really read it all the way through. It's actually Dogen. He never mentions Dogen, but Suzuki Roshi taught straight Dogen. But he made it so that it was really understandable for the ordinary person. So that's kind of how he was so brilliant. All the talks in Zen Mind Beginner's Mind, as well as four newly discovered talks that I'm going to be sharing with you during this particular series. They were all given in the Los Altos living room of a woman named Marion Derby. And she describes herself before she learned how to do Zazen as a divorced middle-aged woman with grown children living in a pleasant middle-class neighborhood with a part-time career, a good income, plenty of freedom, good health, intelligent children, interesting friends, yet dissatisfied. She had the feeling that something was missing from her life. At that point, she signed up for a weekend seminar on meditation at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, and Gary Snyder taught her how to practice Zazen, which experience had a huge impact on her life. And every morning she practiced Zazen, hoping she could go to Japan where she would find her own Zen master. But she saw an ad in the newspaper, and it said, Zen class to begin next Thursday morning at 5:45, the Reverend Shunyu Suzuki Roshi, head priest of Sokoji Zen Buddhist Temple in San Francisco, will start a weekly class in Zen meditation. And the address was in Palo Alto, a short drive from her home. So Thursday morning, she found a yellow porch light on one of the two old two-story houses with a note thumbtacked to the front door. The door is open, please come in. And in the dim light of the hall, she could see a pile of coats and bags on a long bench. And there was a row of shoes on the floor. She stepped through the French doors into the living room, where she smelled pine incense burning. And there were 8 or 10 people sitting on black cushions in the middle of the room. She saw an empty cushion and sat down and crossed her ankles and began staring at the pattern on the oriental rug. And then she heard these silk robes behind her. Though all Suzuki Roshi did that morning was straighten her back and arrange her hands, but something in his total attention gave her the sense of total acceptance. After Zazen, he led a simple service that he had developed for his American students. Then he lectured informally and answered questions. He was 61 with a lively brown eyes and a perky nose, apparently. His voice was soft and his laugh a delightful chuckle, and his movements were as graceful and unselfconscious as a cat's. She knew she had found her first Zen master. One morning after meditation class, she invited Roshi to her home for breakfast before driving him back to the city center. And as soon as he walked into the entrance hall of her home, he stopped. "Ooh, what a beautiful living room," he sighed. Though the thought had never entered her mind until that moment, she knew what it was in his mind. He was picturing the room as a zendo. As they stood at the entrance of the imaginary zendo, she began to visualize the black cushions arranged on the grass green carpet of the room. She could picture Roshi sitting in his brown robes off by the white walls. She could see a Japanese flower arrangement in the alcove above his head, a fire flickering in the fireplace on cold mornings. But her vision was interrupted. She remembered the racket her five children made getting ready for school. So she told him it would never work. But during breakfast, Roshi explained that he wanted to expand the activities of the Zen group. He said he wasn't worried about his children disturbing the Zen students. He said learning to accept the normal noises of one's environment is very good practice for Zen students. So she said, okay, let's give it a try. Nothing formal was ever said, but from that point on, she moved from being one of his students to one of his disciples. For the next few years, they worked together like partners to expand the program of the Zen group. So she was really close to Roshi. You know, they just were like buddies. And she followed all of his ideas of how to make her living room into a zendo. And she learned an enormous amount by his just teaching her as they went along. For example, during her early years of training with him, she learned that Zazen is practiced for the sake of itself, not for the sake of gaining enlightenment or peace of mind, but that it was one of the most effective ways of getting rid of old karmic attachments. One day during a private interview by Doksan, Roshi told her that he thought she should join the Zen Buddhist order. He wanted her to be ordained and wear the Zen Buddhist robes. At first, she was shocked and disturbed. She still had two teenagers living at home. And she recalled Shakyamuni Buddha's home leaving. But after much painful soul searching, she decided to leave home. The question of whether or not to become ordained, she'd decide that later on. So she decided to leave home, but put off the decision about being ordained, and she never was ordained, actually. Suzuki Roshi didn't encourage her to leave home or give away all of her possessions, but when he found out that she was determined to do so, he reluctantly accepted her decision. He felt troubled by her plan to give her home to the Zen group. He tried to talk her out of burning her bridges, but she was stubborn. The gift, she said, was not made entirely out of generosity, but partly from her desire to be free from all ties to her past. Many of her friends and family thought she would regret it, but she never regretted it. So from there, she took care to transfer all her responsibilities to others, and she moved to Tassajara. So she turned, in other words, she gave her home to the Zen Center and to use as a zendo, and that became the Los Altos Zendo. And she left eventually, and she went to Tassajara. And I'm particularly moved by her story because at the last part, giving away all her possessions and moving to Tassajara is exactly what I did. I found Zen at Thanksgiving in 1969 when my first husband and I separated. And I had read nothing about Zen. I knew absolutely nothing. But for some reason, I called the Berkeley Zen Center. And Mel, who was the head priest, said, just come. So the next day, I came for two periods of Zazen in the morning and then one period in the evening. And I continued to do that every day until what was called the summer practice period at Tassajara was started. So I started in the end of November, during the Thanksgiving holiday. And then that summer, I went to Tassajara. And probably it was around April or May of 1970 and having practiced for about 6 months, I gave away all of my possessions, which made the divorce settlement really easy. And I went to Tassajara with everything I own in my backpack. I was very proud of that. Of course, then I had to do Tongario, which is 5 solid days of just sitting with no periods and no breaks. You just sit from about 3:30 in the morning till 10 at night, something like that. And follow there was no schedule, you just sat. But the impulse to start one's life afresh was identical to Marion's, and we both benefited beyond words. Well, here are some of the most important points that I've made today. There's 6 points. The first one is Dogen says, do not regard the capacity to expound the Dharma as superior and the capacity to listen to the Dharma as inferior. If those who speak are venerable, those who listen are venerable as well. Second, if you reflect on yourself, that self is not your true self anymore. You cannot project yourself as some objective thing to think about. That's not you out there, that person you're thinking about. Third, as with Zazen itself, for Dogen, the ritual of listening to the teaching is not undertaken as a means of the goal of awakening or understanding, but simply as an enactment of the Buddhahood already present. So even what we're doing, like right now, there's no gain. There's no gain for any of us. You know, I'm expounding the Dharma, which I don't own, you know, I'm just saying what I know as being the Dharma, and you're just listening to the Dharma. So I'm saying something and you're listening to something, and that's all. There's nothing else happening. That's what's happening right now. And Roshi's point is it's an enactment ritual. And it's full of meaning as a ritual, and that's all, not to make anything more of it. This is a very profound point. Fourth, to have some deep feeling about Buddhism is not the point. We just do what we should do, like eating supper and going to bed. This is Buddhism. So in other words, we don't make a big deal out of, well, this is Buddhism, and so like there's something sacred here. It's, you know, what's actually sacred is, you know, the next thing, what you're doing right now and the next thing you're going to be doing, and you pay very close attention to those things. Fifth, to make our effort moment after moment is our way. In an exact sense, the only thing we can actually study in our life is that on which we are working in each moment. We cannot even study Buddha's words. To study Buddha's words in their exact sense means to study them through some activity which you face moment after moment. So we should be concentrated with our full mind and body on what we do, and we should be faithful subjectively and objectively to ourselves. and especially to our feelings. And sixth and last, Zen is not some kind of excitement, but concentration on our usual everyday routine. Some people start to practice just out of curiosity, and they only make themselves busier. If your practice makes you worse, it's ridiculous. And here is an idea for your reflection during the week. And they're going to refer back to these six main points that I just said. And those six main points will be printed out. As you know, I print out the idea for your reflection during the week so that you don't have to remember it. It's just right there on the website. And so on that same page will be those six things I just mentioned as the main points of today. And the idea for reflection is each of these six main points from today's talk are important basic truths in the practice of Zen. Please pick two of them and write a journal style entry about how this teaching applies to your own life. For example, if you choose number two, and number two is, if you reflect on yourself, this self is not your true self anymore. You cannot project yourself as some objective thing to think about. So if you picked that, you might describe an occasion where you had projected yourself outwards and were comparing yourself to others or judging yourself compared with your ideas about how you think you should be in the world. We all do this all the time. So to think of one instance of that. And then after describing the situation, as you see it projecting yourself outwards, describe the same situation from another point of view, one where you did not project yourself outwards. And stay with that until you feel you really understand. Just keep staying with what it might feel like to study yourself, not projecting yourself outwards. So that's just an example of if you chose number two. So there's six to choose from, and I'm asking you to choose two and to really, really enter into what that point means and what it means to you, especially in your own life, and to talk about it in two different ways. If you chose number two, talk about it and how it applies to your own life. Okay. I hope that's clear. That's the idea for reflection for this week. I'd like to give you a little time to think about questions now. I love your questions, and I love for you to feel free to ask whatever you want. So maybe I'll wait just one more minute so people can have time to think. Does anybody have a question?
Hi, Kelia. We got the first question. And the question is, when Dogen says that taking the Zazen position is itself enlightenment, can you explain what this means?
Dogen teaches, so just to back up for a second, one of the most beautiful things about Buddhism and Zen Buddhism in particular is its focus on non-duality. So there isn't separation between oneself and all beings. And so it isn't I, there's no I that does Zazen. Zazen does Zazen. And so there's no separation. You are enacting when you do Zazen, when you do Zazen, you are putting your body in the position to allow Zazen to do Zazen, which is a non-dual action. And the posture itself is Zen practice, which is enlightenment. So taking the posture, you are being practice and you are being enlightenment. There's no difference between you're taking the Zazen posture and practice or enlightenment. And Dogen is very firm on that point. And it's hard for us to understand because we think in dualistic terms all the time. But if you think in a non-dualistic way, and you realize that it's Zazen that's doing Zazen, then there's no separation. There's just Zazen doing Zazen. And so enlightenment is there, and the practice of Zazen is there. And that is enlightenment already. So the emphasis is on the fact that we are already Buddhas, and just that our mind can't grasp that, it doesn't matter whether our mind grasps it or not, it's still true. Suzuki Roshi, as you heard, uses this expression, reality in its exact sense. So reality in its exact sense is Zazen is enlightenment. And you take that posture, only enlightenment exists. That's what it means. And not to expect to understand it with your mind. Zen is really not available to our mind's understanding. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. The next question that we have is, what do you think is Dogen's perspective on the role of listening versus speaking in the context of expounding the Dharma?
What do I think is Dogen's perspective?
On the role of listening versus speaking in right. Context of expounding the Dharma?
Well, so that's what I thought I was talking about. Dogen feels that there's no difference. So I'll back up. The the ritual that we are doing right this minute, the ritual of one person expounding the Dharma and another person listening to the Dharma being expounded, they are both equally profound actions, and they're both needed for the ritual to be enacted. So we are enacting a ritual of expounding the Dharma, which requires one person saying the words of the Dharma, expounding the sutras of the Dharma, and another person listening to the sutras being expounded. That whole event involving at least two people is a ritual, and Dogen's feeling is that when that happens, all of the Buddhas and all of the ancestors are participating simultaneously, expounding and listening to the Dharma. So that this isn't this, you know, in a sense, there is no such thing as time. And when you erase time from the configuration, what this enactment, this ritual enactment that we're involved in right this minute, involves all beings from all times, including Buddha, Bodhidharma, Dogen, and all beings. So it's a very, it's very profound. But furthermore, it's not limited to the ritual of expounding the Dharma. It includes you behaving with full presence and full effort in every minute of your life. That's also a ritual, that you're engaged 100% in every single dish that you wash, and 100% in every floor that you vacuum. There's no such thing as a half-hearted effort. In order to live to inhabit your full self and to enter reality in its exact sense. That's reality in its exact sense. You being fully engaged with your full presence and full effort, minute by minute, throughout every single day and night. And practicing that through practicing Zazen helps you to stay focused. And it also gives you entry into this enlightenment. Thank you. That's all I can say, really.
Thank you, Gail. The next question we have is, so someone said that I was thinking of rereading Zen Mind, Beginner Mind. Is there a value to do this and perhaps to read it again and again? Maybe I missed something. On the other hand, should I look for other books to read? How would I choose?
You don't need to look for other books to read. I'll give you something you can do that I did myself and I found really valuable. So Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind is a book expounding Dogen's philosophy, basically, and Dogen's practice, in simple language, and it's about three aspects of Zen practice: right practice, right attitude and right understanding, those three things, right practice, right attitude, and right understanding. It sort of covers the whole gamut of what we need to pay attention to if we want to be a conscientious Zen student. And the way that I found really useful to read Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and you can read it, it could be the only book you read the rest of your life, frankly. It's so profound, and you'll get something different every single time you read the same chapter. But I took chapter by chapter, you know, they're like a page and a half or something. They're not that long. So take one chapter at a time, and then you read it, and then close your eyes and write. You can open up a computer document and have, you know, document one being your saying in your own words what came up for you when you read the first chapter, these first few pages. So whatever the chapter is, it's they're all just a few pages. Read that, just that, and then close your eyes, or if you can't type or write with your eyes closed, and just, you know, be very in a meditative state of mind, and just allow what you just read from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind to just completely enter you, and free associate. Go ahead and free associate. Oh, this made me think of such and such, and when I was feeling such and such a way, and at that time I behaved this way, but now I understand that maybe that wasn't the right way. Maybe I should have behaved that way. I'm just making all this up, but for you to make it your own, just make it completely your own, that you're there. It's as if Suzuki Roshi were talking right into your ear, and he said this little talk, and you put the book down, and then you become the listener who has listened carefully and has made the talk your own, and write down what happens then. And then you will have a chronicle of exactly your response, you know, in 2024 to your reading of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And in 2025, you can do the whole thing all over again. And by 2027, you can go back to your 2024 essays, and you may be stunned by how much more you understand of the same thing. That's my best suggestion of how to go about, quote, studying Zen texts, at least for now. Later, there are study groups, and there are many opportunities to have Dogen's fascicles from the Shobogenzo explicated by great Zen masters. But right now, thoroughly understanding Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, is more than enough. And to make it your own in this way is just it's just a wonderful experience, and it can just go on and on. You know, it's just almost like you never outgrow that experience, because each year, no 2 minutes are the same, and you're always growing, especially if you're practicing Zen. And so again, 3 or 4 years from now, your understanding will be radically different. And it'll be really interesting to study yourself this way. Thank you. That's my answer. I hope that helps. I hope you do it.
Thank you, Gail. I've got another one. I know people in the Bay Area who have been in Buddhist environments. In fact, much of the Bay Area seems captured by Buddhist language, but sometimes people can seem diabolic. by using seemingly enlightened language, yet still no closer to being one with everyone. What are your thoughts on this phenomenon?
My thoughts are that Zen, and let me just speak about Zen, is all about practice. It's not about ideas. It's not about concepts. It's not about understanding anything. It's about practice. And through practice, the teachings enter your body. And it doesn't guarantee that all of your behavior will be perfect. In fact, it probably won't be perfect, but you may catch your imperfections faster and digest them and metabolize them differently from if you weren't practicing Zen. And my sense is that a lot of people who talk about Zen don't practice Zen. The number of practitioners and the number of people who talk about it is vastly different, especially people who practice Zazen regularly. There's not that many. And it takes that effort regularly to really get the teachings in your body. So I'm sorry that there's a lot of misrepresentation, but I think it's true in any religion, frankly. You know, there's the Sunday at church way of practicing Christianity, and there's the true Christian way of practicing Christianity that has a lot to do with kindness and compassion. So I guess I should stop now. I want to thank you very much for being here. And I want to thank my team, Brian and Sahar and Brendan, for all of the work that they do behind the scenes to make these talks possible. And I want to remind you that this will be the last series in this episode of Giving Dharma Talks. And I hope that you are able to find your way to attend the next 9 of them and enjoy them while they last. I'm certainly enjoying giving them. All right, bye for now.